We started looking at the I am statements in the book of John. Jesus has made many I am statements in throughout his teaching, but there are seven in John that are self-revelatory about his self-identity. And so we talked about the bread of life last week. Today I want to move to John chapter 10, and there's actually two I am statements here. We're going to focus mainly on the second, although we'll begin with the first. In John chapter 10, verse 7, Jesus says these words, "Most assuredly I say to you, I am the door of the sheep. All whoever came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not hear them. I am the door. If anyone enters by me, he will be saved and will go in and out and find pasture. The thief does not come except to steal, to kill, and to destroy. I have come that you may have life and that you may have it more abundantly. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd gives his life for his sheep. But a hireling, he who is not the shepherd, one who does not own the sheep, sees the wolf coming and leaves the sheep and flees. And the wolf catches the sheep and scatters them. The hireling flees because he is a hireling and does not care about the sheep. I am the good shepherd. I know my sheep and am known by my own. As the Father knows me, even so I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. And other sheep I have which are not of this fold. Them also I must bring, and they will hear my voice and will be one flock and one shepherd. Therefore, my Father loves me because I lay down my life that I may take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of myself. I have power to lay it down, and I have power to take it up again. This command I have received from my Father." The 23rd Psalm is the most used Old Testament passage today. It speaks of the Lord being our shepherd. And the shepherd was a position that is often mentioned in the Old Testament. We know that Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Joseph, Moses, David were all shepherds. And so it was a position of some stature. It was a position that the people were well aware of. But in the 23rd Psalm, God looks at his people and says, "Now I am your shepherd. Sheep have shepherd. You're the sheep of my pasture. I am your great shepherd." And then here in John chapter 10, Jesus seemingly reaches back into the Old Testament and says that 23rd Psalm where God says, "I'm your shepherd," applies to me because I'm now your shepherd and you are now my sheep. Now, the shepherd position was all-encompassing. And so there's a profundity to saying this. Some of us perhaps have married people, and we had assumed that they would be our shepherd, that they would provide all of our needs. And if you went into a marriage believing that, you are very disappointed, or have become very disappointed. Others have looked at their parents and said, "Well, my parents are my shepherds. They can provide all of my needs." And that inevitably will lead to disappointment in your life. Others have looked at jobs or managers, or you've looked at political leaders and said, "This politician, this leader can be the great shepherd for us." And inevitably you're disappointed because no one can really be a shepherd but Jesus Christ. No one can provide all of your needs but Jesus Christ. Now, the magnitude of this shepherding by Jesus, I think, is only understood as you think about what it means to be a sheep. Because if you think about it, being a sheep's a hard position. Being a sheep's a really hard job. If you think about it, for three reasons. First of all, sheep are weak. In fact, nobody wants to be a sheep. To call somebody a sheep is not a compliment. No nation, as far as I know, has used as our symbol the sheep. There's been bears and eagles and lions and tigers and rams, but no sheep. No sports team, as I am aware of, has taken as their symbol, their mascot, the sheep. Even in Greene County, we got Chucky Doak Black Knights. That's a nice mascot. You got the North Greene Huskies. Dogs, but that's okay. You got the South Greene Rebels. Then you got the Greenville High Devils. Devils. I'd rather be a devil, they say, than a sheep. And a green one at that. Green devils. Not white sheep. I'd rather be a green devil. Nobody wants to be a lamb. Nobody wants to be a sheep. The political parties choose as their symbols elephants and donkeys. But a donkey is better than a sheep, apparently. Nobody wants to be a sheep. And the reason is because they're weak. They're not bright. In fact, you don't hear about roving bands or roving flocks of sheep. Almost every other type of animal can live in the wild. You got wild dogs, wild cats, wild coyotes, wild wolves. You got wild horses in places. You got the wild buffalo. You got things. Almost everything can live in the wild except sheep. There ain't no wild sheep. They either get eat or they get stuck in branches and starve to death. They get stuck in bushes. Or they eat things that are poisonous because they can't tell the difference and die. So sheep are naturally weak. They're naturally not all that bright. But secondly, they're delicious. And that's a problem too. Because they're weak, but man, they taste good. I was talking to my brother once, and I think I've shared this before, but he raises, he has a lot of chickens. I said, what's the hardest part about having chickens? He said, everything wants to eat them. Even the rodents want to eat their eggs. Everything wants to eat a chicken. And in the wild, everything wants to eat a lamb. I mean, think about it. You got your lamb chops. You got your lamb cutlets. You got your lamb shanks. You got rack of lamb. You got leg of lamb. You got red lamb stew, lamb pie. You got lamb kafka. You got lamb kebabs. You got Mongolian lamb stir fry. You got lamb everything. I wish somebody would have lamb for Sunday dinner. I don't think any restaurant have lamb on them. But so they're very delicious, and that's a problem. And that makes them then the ultimate prey. They're weak. They're not bright. They're delicious. And so everybody wants them. Now, they have the wool. So the Bible says they're... what doesn't want to eat them wants to steal them. The wolves want to eat them. Maybe some of the thieves want to eat them. But the thieves that don't want to eat them want to steal them for their wool. They want to use them. So let me put that all together. The problem with being a sheep is that it's weak, it's tasty, and everybody who doesn't want to devour it wants to use it. And so even, he says, the hirelings... even those who should be taking care of the lambs, hired to take care of the sheep, even they don't take care of the sheep because inevitably the wolves and the thieves come and the hirelings run away. So it's really hard being a sheep. When Jesus looked out at that first century audience that would listen to him teach, he said, they're like sheep without a shepherd. And he looked at those people, so many of them poor, so many of them widows, so many of them orphans, all these kids running around. And he looks at them and says, they're sheep. They're sheep. They're weak. They don't understand how weak they are. They don't understand how they're easy prey for wolves, for people to use them, for people to abuse them. They're prey. They're the ultimate prey for the wolves in this culture, for Satan himself. I think we look at our own culture. If you look at our culture, you can't help saying there's so many sheep, there's so many lambs. There's so many that are weak, there's so many that make prey, easy prey for predators. I was thinking about that passage in the Old Testament where David's had the affair with Bathsheba, and the prophet Nathan comes to him and baits him with that parable of the rich man who had flocks of sheep, and he had his friends, and he wanted his friends to feast on lamb. So instead of taking something from his own flock, he goes to his neighbor. His neighbor has one little lamb. It sleeps with the kids. It eats at their table. He takes the lamb and he slaughters it to feed his friends. And of course, David is baited because he's soft towards lambs, but not so much people. And he says, "A man who did this must die." And the prophet says, "David, you're the man." But Nathan is saying to him, "Why did this man, he's got flocks, why did he go after the one little lamb, David? Why did he do that?" I look at our culture, though, and it seems like that's what happens. I mean, I look at this thing with the drag queens. I mean, if you're of that mentality, if that's your thing, you want to be a drag queen, you got nightclubs. I don't care what you do in the nightclubs, I ain't showing up. I mean, you got parades in San Francisco, New York. If you want to put on the booty shorts and the baby oil and dance around in the street of San Francisco, I don't care. You got the college campuses. Why do you got to go after the lambs in elementary school? Why you got to go down there with the babies? Why you got to go after the lambs? I look at men. Some of them beat their wives. Those wives are fragile. A lot of them are. Not every wife is fragile, but many of them are. They got a guy, got anger issues, beats on a woman 50, 70 pounds lighter than him. What a coward. If you're that angry, why don't you go down to the bar and find somebody your size and fight with them? Why you got to work on the helpless? Why you got to hit the lambs? Why you got to go after that? I look at parents and culture, and they get into drugs. The ultimate sacrifice are their children. Well, why you got to sacrifice the lambs for your habit? Why do the lambs have to go without their basic needs because you got to snort something? Why do the lambs have to suffer? People get divorced and the kids get thrown here and there. Woman will go out, she'll have men bringing them in, bringing the boyfriends in to live with her. Like, you know, why are you doing that to your lambs? Why are you doing that to the lambs? Jesus said that those who offend the little ones, he took the child on his knee in Matthew 18, and he said, those who offend this little one, it would be better if a rock were tied around their neck and they were thrown into the ocean than to offend or hurt the little ones. Now, that sounds pretty bad to me, to have a rock tied around your neck and put in the ocean. I don't know many things that could be worse than that, but Jesus said, that's light if you mess with the babies. The Old Testament God would frequently warn them, you better take care of the widows and you better take care of the orphans. Take care of the lambs. But if you broaden out from that, I think Jesus is also getting at something else. In terms of there being a devil and demons, compared to them, we're all lambs. I mean, there are those who are more fragile. There are those who are more weak. There are those who, I suppose you might say, are easier prey. But in terms of the devil, which is a lion seeking whom he may devour, everybody's a lamb, so to speak. I guess there are some wolves among us. There are those who are doing the work of Satan. I guess I wouldn't deny that. But most people are lambs when it comes to the great lion. And so he'll look at Peter and say, Peter, Satan wanted to sift you like wheat, but I pray for you. Peter, Satan wants to absolutely destroy you. He wants to tear you limb to limb. And Peter, I stood in the gap for you and prayed for you. And everyone, or most everyone, then compared to Satan, is a lamb. We're fragile, we're needy compared to his ability to deceive, compared to his army of demons, compared to those that he either inhabits in the human realm or controls in the human realm. Everyone is in need of a shepherd. I mean, it's hard, isn't it? Sometimes, I'm not there yet, but some of you have been there to try to tell your teenager, listen, I want to know where you are on Friday night, and you better be home when you say you're going to be home. They don't understand that, but what you are saying is, I know there's predators out there. It's not as safe as you think it is out there. It's hard sometimes to look at a woman and say, you know what? You better be careful with that guy. You better be careful. That guy can destroy your life. I know you think you're liberated. I know you think you're tough. But that guy right there, you better be careful. It's hard to look at sometimes a man and say, listen, I know she's got a sad story. I know you want to be the knight in shining armor for her, but she's a user. She's a user. It's not going to end well. It's hard sometimes to look at people and say, listen, you're a sheep. There's a devil. There's demons. There are those that are controlled by him, and you can't mess with those people because you're a sheep and you need a shepherd. So it's only, I think, in the context of understanding what life is like for a sheep that then this passage begins to take life, because Jesus comes and he says, I'll be your shepherd. If you're a sheep, I'll be your shepherd. Now look at what the shepherd does very quickly. First of all, he says, I'm the door. I think the reference here, as best I can tell, is that there would be sheepfolds in town, but it seems like the reference is what happens when the sheep are out in the pastures and you can't get them back to town, and there would be landscapes, there would be canyons, or there would be enclosed places with rock, and they would drive the sheep into the canyons. There wasn't a gate, but the shepherd would lay there, and the shepherd would be the gate. So anything going into the canyon to get the sheep had to come over him. And so Jesus is saying, listen, if I'm your shepherd, I'll be the door. Anything that gets to you will have to come over me. I'll be the guard right there. So that is magnificent, because what that means for me is that if I'm his sheep and I'm in his fold, anything that has gotten to me, it won't destroy me. Anything he lets in isn't there to destroy me. In his power, I can deal with it. In his strength, I can handle it, because he wouldn't have let it through the door if it was there to destroy me. Beautiful thing. Even when death comes, my last breath on earth is my first breath in heaven. Death doesn't destroy my soul. It only moves me to the higher pasture. So he says, I'll be the door. And then he says, I'll lead you to what you need. He says, you'll go in and out the pasture. I'll get you what you need. Don't worry. I know you have need of food and clothing, Jesus said. I'll take care of you. I'll hook you up. I know you have need of rest, so I gave you a Sunday. Take the rest. Rest on the Sabbath if you can, and I'll Chick-fil-A you. I'll take care of you. You don't need to work 7 days. You can work six. I'll give you what you need. He says, I'll provide for your need. He knows what you have need of. He says, I'll take you to green pasture. And then he says here, and I'll lay down my life for you. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. Now we know he did that. Over 2,000 years ago on Calvary, the great shepherd laid down his life to save you and I from hell, to save you and I from damage in this life and damnation in the next. In our culture, we don't talk about hell and damnation much, and we would prefer often to see the sacrifice of Jesus on the cross as a symbol of his great love for us. It is a symbol of his great love for us, but it's only a symbol of his great love if he's saving us from something worse. I mean, think about it. If you're walking along a path, On one side of the path is a cliff, and the cliff goes down to a rushing river. If you're walking with a man and he looks at you and says, I love you with all my heart and let me prove it. And he jumps off the cliff and kills himself. What do you say? The guy was nuts. I mean, he said, let me demonstrate my love for you. And he just kills himself. He said the guy was bat crazy. But if you're walking along that path and you fall in and he jumps in, he gets hold of you, he gets you to the shore, you're saved, but at the expense of saving your life, he loses his life. In that case, you say, what great love he had for me. And to say that Jesus simply hung on a cross because he loved us, if that's all that he did as a demonstration of love, he was insane. He had to save us from something. And what he saved us from is a result and penalty of our sin, which was damage in this life and damnation in the next. He lays down his life for his children. He lays down his life for his sheep. And you know the beautiful thing about this is this. He didn't just do it then, but he does it time and time and time again. He comes. He dwells among us. He walks with us. He talks with us. And so I don't understand why he gives us that attention. I really don't. I can see how he paid the price for me and to save us, but there's parts of me that doesn't understand why he continues to give us his time and attention, but he does. He's still with us. He leads us in green pastures. He helps us to find rest. He gives us strength. He takes us beside the still waters. There he is, and he nourishes us in those dry periods of time when our soul feels parched. He gets us to a place where we can find refreshment, that he restores us when we slip, when we fall, when we disappoint him, when we disappoint ourselves. There he is, and he's bringing us back together. He's healing us. He's bringing us back into the fold. And not only that, he's with us even in the valley of the shadow of death, the Bible says, so that when I go through the valley, I'm not there. I'm going through the valley, but even as I'm traveling through it in the pain, in the sorrow, he's with me even there. He prepares a table before my enemies for me in the midst of my enemies. So there may be people in my life who don't care about me and don't like me, and he just sits there and he closes their mouth and he feasts with me. He blesses me, and they just got to sit there and take it. He restores my soul. Bible says he feasts me in front of my enemies. He says my cup runneth over. He overruns my cup. I have more than I need. He blesses me tremendously. When I think about the goodness of God, my soul cries out, the psalmist says. And he says, surely goodness and mercy will follow me all the days of my life. I just got hung up on that this morning as I was meditating on it. Surely goodness and mercy follows me. It stalks me. The goodness of God, the mercy of God, it just stalks me. It's like in the green valleys or in the green pastures, goodness, mercy, goodness, mercy is right behind me. And then when I'm beside the still waters, there's goodness and mercy and goodness and mercy just right up on me. But then when I go through the valley of the shadow of death, there's still goodness and mercy and goodness and mercy. And then when all of my enemies are there and I feel like I don't have a friend in the world, there's goodness and mercy and goodness and mercy. And then when it's my time to die,
There's goodness and mercy and goodness and mercy just stalking me the whole way. When I'm following the shepherd, there's goodness and mercy and goodness and mercy. When I'm one of the 99 in the fold, there's goodness and mercy and goodness and mercy. But when I'm the one wandering sheep out in the wilderness, there's still goodness and mercy and goodness and mercy seeking me out. What I'm trying to tell you is there's a great shepherd here today. Stand with me. My voice is finished. Getting in the foghorn, leghorn territory. Trying to tell you is there's a great shepherd. Jesus Christ came from heaven to earth, the bread of life. But he also came as a shepherd to sheep. Shepherds meet all the needs of their sheep. They meet them all. They know the pain. They know the weakness. They know the struggle of being a sheep. And I wonder today, if you need help from your shepherd, why don't you come? Why don't you come? Why don't you say, I need to get a little close to the shepherd today. I'm hurting. I've got an issue. I need my head anointed with oil. I need some strength. I need rest. I feel parched. I need him to take me beside the still waters. He's a great shepherd. He's a great shepherd. He's a great God today.